Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday Morning Show. I'm Phil Huff, one of the Morning Show hosts, and really excited to bring to our listeners today the general topic of bear awareness. It's so timely this time of year, as more and more people are getting outside to know more about bears and what to do when we encounter them. And I'm pleased to have with us today two guests who know an awful lot about this topic: Jeremy Gaffield, Senior Conservation Officer in Grizzly Bear Enforcement and Education Project from the Idaho Department of Fish and Game, and Kim Annis, the Grizzly Bear Management Specialist for the Cabinet Yak Ecosystem from the Wildlife Division of Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Good morning, Jeremy. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning.
Let's first delve just a little bit more. That's a thumbnail sketch of each of you into who you are and the work you do. And so, Jeremy, why don't we start with you? Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be in this position and what exactly you do as the Grizzly Bear Enforcement Education Project Conservation Officer.
Okay, thank you. I kind of grew up in the Sydney, Montana area. And so I had experience with the outdoors there. And then when I moved to Silverton, Oregon, again, Pacific Northwest, plenty of animals, and I had a lot of interaction with it. And I just figured that being a conservation officer is something that has always interested me. But I went and did the Marine Corps for, ended up retiring from there. So 20 years. And then I got my first position with Idaho Department of Fish and Game, and I was down in Grandview. And down there, I was doing the regular conservation officer deal, running around, making sure that folks are doing what they're supposed to. And then this position opened up. The gentleman that was here for quite some time decided to retire. So I put in for it and I got the position. And it is one of the two positions that we have in the state that are covered underneath the Endangered Species Act. And the other one, of course, is a bull trout. So I've been doing it ever since he retired, and really is, besides the enforcement of regular fishing, trapping, and hunting, more focuses on the grizzly bear because of his special protection. So
can you tell us what, and I'm sure this is a hard one to describe, but maybe what a typical day, or maybe it's a typical week or month, is like, and it maybe cycles through the year.
Absolutely. And it absolutely cycles through the year. So you nailed that. Let's see right now, what does my week look like? Sometimes I'll get phone calls from concerned citizens or just people wanting some information on how to set up an electric fence, or I heard this, or I saw this on the news. So answering questions. I do get out and patrol. I'm mostly patrolling in areas that the grizzly bear is located, and that's just going around making sure the gates are shut and locked, talking to hunters, fishermen, making sure they have the things and are educated that there are bears in the area, and bear spray is probably a great idea if they don't have it on them.
Yeah, that's always good. Now in the winter, do you hibernate like the bears, or do you focus on classroom education?
We do focus on classroom education in the winter. I would like to hibernate like the bears, but we still go out and I do the regular patrols also, mostly trapping once you get into the hard winter. And I'll go around and check ice fishermen, just like other conservation officers. But the education piece does become more of the focus during the winter.
That's a wonderful overview. Kim, same questions for you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be doing the work you're doing.
Yeah. I have a little bit of a different history than Jeremy's. I grew up mostly in upstate New York and in southern Michigan. So I'm an East Coast girl, initially anyway. At a high school, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, but I knew that it was something outside. And I was lucky enough to find a wildlife program at a New York university and got my bachelor's degree out of called SUNY ESF, SUNY Environmental Science and Forestry, out of Syracuse, New York. And then I spent 5 years traveling all over the country doing what we call seasonal technician work with wildlife to determine kind of work I like, what kind of wildlife I wanted to work with, where I wanted to work with them, and ultimately whether I wanted to get my master's degree. And I worked on everything from ducks on the north slope of Alaska to elk habitat in the Selway Bitterroots to black bears in Florida and North Carolina, and ultimately got my master's degree at University of Florida studying people and conflicts with black bears. A little over 15 years ago, Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks created a grizzly bear specialist position for Northwest Montana out of the Libby area. And we're looking to try to get ahead of conflict prevention and helping residents out with the current conflicts that they were having with black bears, in order to try to ultimately prevent conflicts with grizzly bears as the population increased in the future. And I was hired in that position a little over 15 years ago and have been helping the residents of Northwest Montana ever since. I serve all of Lincoln and Sanders counties for anyone who's familiar with Northwest Montana. So it's a little bit of driving and a lot of windshield time. And my primary job is to be on call to mitigate conflicts between bears and people, regardless of species, to help folks prevent conflicts from occurring to begin with, and then to help people understand bears, do education outreach type of things, and generally help residents. And that's primarily my goals out there, and ultimately help the bears as well.
Now, states manage wildlife populations. Idaho manages the wildlife population here, while the land management agencies, the Forest Service for the most part, manage the land. And similarly in Montana, the state agency manages wildlife. But when it comes to threatened and endangered species, grizzly bears, things shift a little bit. Kim, maybe tell us a little bit about how that's different and where the state agencies' responsibilities begin and end and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service picks up.
Sure. So yeah, the grizzly bear in the lower 48 states is listed as a federally protected species, as a threatened species, and they have federal protections against the killing of bears for anything besides typically safety reasons, human safety reasons. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, we help manage the day-to-day activities between bears and people. We help the residents fix those conflicts that do happen on a day-to-day basis. And whether that means helping a resident that had, for example, where I'm headed next after this interview, is to help a resident with a grizzly bear that had tried to get into their chicken coop. And so helping them find out what it means to prevent it for them, whether that's an electrified fence, whether that means using a bear trap or using another type of management tool. We do those day-to-day assistance for the residents, regardless of what that tool actually means that provides the assistance.
So let's turn a little bit to the bears themselves. I mean, so many people know or think they know everything about bears, black bears, grizzly bears, and yet there's a lot of misconceptions out there. And there's a lot of people new to our area who might not be familiar with it. So tell us just a little bit about the bears. Let's start with maybe the differences between a black bear and a grizzly bear, the physical differences, behavioral differences.
I can start that. So there's really, you know, there are separate species. We have the American black bear and we have the brown bear. out in this area in the lower 48 states, we typically call the brown bear a grizzly bear. And you can thank Lewis and Clark for coining that phrase. They came across a grizzled old bear and the name sort of stuck because of their grizzled pattern that they typically have in their coats. But everywhere else in the world, they are called brown bears. They are two completely separate species. They cannot hybridize. They cannot interbreed and create a different subspecies. And there's really two main differences between the two. Grizzly bears are designed to dig, and black bears are designed to climb. And their body features indicate those two differences. And the four body features that we look for that indicate the difference between species are the length of a grizzly bear's claws are longer than a black bear's, typically 2 to 4 inches long, designed to dig into the ground. Whereas black bears are hooked and designed to climb or bite into tree bark to climb trees. Grizzly bears have a muscle mass on their shoulders called a hump. And that muscle mass is, again, designed to aid in digging. Black bears don't need that muscle mass to climb trees, so they don't have one. Facial features of the two species are a bit different as well. Grizzly bears tend to have shorter, rounder ears that are set further apart than black bears, which are more triangular in shape and closer together. And then you don't see it quite as much in this area as in other parts of Montana, Wyoming, or even Alaska, but brown bears, grizzly bears tend to have more of a dished nose than the straight nose of a black bear. And so those are the primary features that can tell you the difference between the two species. There's not much in behavioral differences. Both species will exhibit defensive behaviors or even predatory behaviors, but their food resources, how they use the landscape and other types of things are very similar between the two species. So anywhere you would find a black bear, you could easily find a grizzly bear.
Yeah. How are the population? Go ahead, Jeremy.
Oh, I was just going to say, nicely said, Kim. And just to reiterate, that the color and size is not, and even the scat is not a good indicator for species. We need to see one of those other things that Kim mentioned.
Absolutely. Yeah. Size is relative. You know, a small grizzly bear can be the same size as a black bear, and bears can be all different colors. And so neither of those things are going to tell you what species you are looking at in that particular moment. Well said, Jeremy.
Although in the field there, it may be too late by the time you get a chance to look at tracks, but the tracks do show differently.
Yes.
They do. Yeah, they do. And that's that body type difference. They have different shape of their toes, because grizzly bears are designed to dig and black bears are designed to climb. And so looking at just the front tracks alone, not the back tracks, while large and impressive, and they walk heel down like we do, they walk plantigrade, the back feet are not going to tell you what species you're looking at, but the front tracks will. Grizzly bears have five toes, they're in a straight line, that if you were to put a ruler along the edge of their main pad, all of those five toes would be above that ruler. Whereas a black bear, they have a more curved shape to their toes. And if you were to put a ruler on the main pad, one or both of the outer toes will fall beneath that line. And then the claw marks as well. You typically do see a lot of black bear claw marks because they're sharp, they're curved, and they bite into the earth, and they'll be very close to the toe pads. Whereas a grizzly bear's may or may not show up, and they're going to be somewhere between 2 to 4 inches away from the toe pads themselves.
So let's talk about how they're doing. What do the populations look like? And there's different sub-regions for each of them here. And so maybe let's start over here in Idaho. Jeremy, tell us how they're doing in Idaho, both black and grizzly bears.
For the Selkirks, there's roughly 80-ish And that is according to the Fish and Wildlife Service. They are the ones that are doing most of the surveying work. And then over in the Cabinet Yak, which is, you know, separated only by a few miles in between the two, is 60 to 65 in between there, minus Canada. So that's not counting the bears that are up in Canada. And they're doing pretty well. I mean, they've been growing at the Cabinet Yak is increasing at about 1.9%, and the Selkirks, they are also increasing at 2.9%. So it takes them a little bit to get there. The black bear is a little bit harder of a deal because there's not as much work going into it because of the status of the black bear. But for Game Management Unit 1, and for folks that aren't familiar with that, that is the Clark Fork River and the Pend'Oreille River north. You know, it kind of makes a little box. So if you take Washington up north, and then you can take Canada over east, and then Montana back down, and you follow the rivers there, there's about 2,000 plus or minus. So,
Kim, tell us more about the grizzly bear population over the Montana.
Yeah, the Cabinet Yak area is probably best described as the Purcell Mountain portion in the United States, regardless of whether that's, you know, Idaho or Montana, everything east of the Moyet River. And then the entirety of the Cabinet Mountains, which is south of the Kootenai River, but into Idaho as well, running all the way down to the towns of Plains, Montana. And that's kind of the general Cabinet Yak area. And within that area, Jeremy was spot on, somewhere between 60, 65-ish grizzly bears. And we say ish because it takes a lot of resources to give a population estimate. And the last population estimate was done in 2012. And we had around 50 to 55 grizzly bears at that time. And it has been 10 years since then. We know what the population growth trending has been due to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's research on a yearly basis. And knowing what that growth trend is and where we started at in 2012, we have a good idea as to how many we're gaining on a per year or on a 10-year basis. Grizzly bears grow very slowly as a population. One generation of grizzly bears is about 14 years. So, you know, in 25 years, you're only having two generations of bears that have gone out there. So they are slow growing, and that is a natural thing. So that, you know, 2%, even 3% population growth is a normal amount of growth. They don't really grow very much faster than that. As far as black bears are concerned, like Jeremy said, there's just not as much research on that game animal as to what population numbers are, but we do have a good idea as to what our density actually is on the Montana side of things. And in Northwest Montana, we have about a half to one black bear per square mile, and that's fairly dense. And we host, that can host a fair number of black bears out on the landscape.
Without doing the math, that is a fair number of black bears. I'd say it's got to be at least a couple thousand through the region. And
at least, yes. And they do grow at a much faster rate than grizzly bears do. Yeah.
So that's probably the answer to the question, but it seems like there's so many more black bears than grizzly bears. And intuitively, it would be that their reproductive rate capacity is just that much greater.
It is. It's that much different, even though we hunt the black bear on both sides, both states. We in some areas hunt them quite heavily from spring to fall. But yet we still have a fairly dense population. And so the habitat is very good for bears out in this area on either side of the state lines. And that's a good thing. We know that we can host a fair number of black bears. It also means that we can host a number of grizzly bears as well, because they use some similar habitats.
That's a nice segue into, tell us a little bit more about the hunting regulations. It's worth repeating the prohibition on hunting grizzlies, but give us a quick overview of bear hunting regulations. I know they'll vary a little bit state by state, so let's continue with Kim.
Yeah, in Montana, we do have a spring and a fall season that lasts for, let me think here, I think spring season opens on April 15th, and it runs to the end of May, and fall season runs, I believe, from September 15th to the end of our general rifle season. So a fair bit of opportunity out there for harvesting black bears, and you can take, an individual can take one per year. As far as grizzly bears go, they are still listed as a game animal in Montana with a closed season. So we do not currently hunt grizzly bears, regardless of their federal status in Montana. And at some point in time, we do hope, the agency hopes, there will be an opportunity to maybe take a limited number of grizzly bears on a hunt in places probably elsewhere in Montana, perhaps what we call the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem, which runs from Glacier National Park all the way down to the community of Lincoln, which hosts somewhere around 1,100 grizzly bears in comparison to the 60-ish we have here. So a population that could likely handle additional mortality through harvest without it affecting the overall population status.
Jeremy, tell us a little bit about the regulations in Idaho.
And Kim answered that last piece really nice with the grizzly. It's the same for us for hunting. There is no hunting because of its protection currently. And even if it was to be delisted, I don't foresee us anytime soon, just because of the size of the population up here, having a hunting season in the Panhandle area. But elsewhere, I also agree that that is something that we've tried for and will try for in the future. As far as the black bear, yeah, it's from the middle of April till the middle of June is the spring season. And we do have a fall season that is the end of August till the end of October. There's little things that are a little bit different because of the grizzly being in this area. So in Game Management Unit 1, we do not allow baiting. So that's probably one of the biggest differences of where the grizzly and the black bear coexist.
We've mentioned hibernation a couple of times, and we probably should start with a general description of the bears not being true hibernators, but walk us through that and tell us a little bit about the general times that they seem to go in and emerge from their dens.
I'd be happy to take that one. It really depends on the sex and age of the bear, on when they go into their dens and when they come out of their dens. So in an average year, you typically see, this goes both for both species, the females that have cubs at their side or are going to have cubs that winter will typically go in sometime in October to early November. The individual bears that have no young, that maybe are the sub-adults, bears under the age of 5 and 6 years old, they're not quite adults yet. They might stay out a little bit longer and typically go in sometime before Thanksgiving. And then the adult males, they can stay out a lot longer if they are finding enough food resources. And often they do in the form of the end of hunting season. They're cleaning up gut piles on for the animals that have been harvested, or finding wounded animals that have been wounded during rut and can sustain themselves for a little bit longer than some of those other ages of bears. And I have seen grizzly bears in particular stay out until that Christmas. And then they come out in reverse order. The earliest I typically have a bear come out is the first day of spring. It's the adult males that show up first, and then the younger aged bears that are single, the sub-adults, the females that had cubs from the year before or the year before that, if they're grizzly bears, will come out next. And then any bear female that had cubs during that winter, which are typically born around February 1st, will come out the very latest. But most of the bears are out, all out by about May 15th of each year. And you're correct. We don't call it typically hibernation. It's a general term. They go into this torpor status where if true hibernators, if you were to look inside where they're hibernating and sleeping, it would take about an hour for them to wake up and restore their body systems to look back at you. But if you were to stick your head into a bear den, they will pick up their heads and look right back at you and possibly even chase you out of their dens. So they are awake all winter long. They kind of just do a lot of napping. They just slow themselves down a little bit in comparison to the a lot of a typical hibernator.
Yeah, so don't try that at home, sticking your
head. Do not try that at home.
I've heard also, and tell me if this is correct, that while it's not necessarily all the time, it's not unusual for a bear to get up in the middle of the winter and go outside the den looking for food or just stretching their legs.
It's not. Yeah. They're not looking for food, though. They actually typically take a full 10 days once they truly leave their den to digest food again. So they're not looking for food or water. A bear that during the winter time does not eat, they don't drink, they don't defecate, and they don't urinate. And so it isn't until they are truly up and away and totally going to leave their den for good that they start doing all of those things. So they might poke their heads out, they might get disturbed, they might get a little dripping on their head if it starts getting warm and the snow starts to melt and nobody likes their head dripped on. So they might get up and even wander around a little bit and decide, is it spring yet? And if it's not, then they climb back in and go back to sleep.
I understand the impulse. I do that every night. So let's talk a little bit about, and Jeremy, maybe you want to take this on. What does someone do when they encounter a bear? Let's just look at a general bear encounter. What happens?
Okay, well, most encounters is just somebody walking on the trail. They come around and there's a bear because they like walking the easy ways just like we do. So if there's a good trail, then there's a possibility of a bear walking on it. So when they come around the corner, you know, the bear is going to be surprised also. So is what we encourage folks to do is just to look big, right? Put your hands up, make sure that the bear knows you're there by, you know, saying something to it. We use the terminology a lot when we're, teaching classes, hey bear, or something along that lines. Get your bear spray ready and back out of the area. And that's no different if you're riding a bike or if you're hunting or anything else. You know, if you encounter it, if I come up and I see a grizzly print on the area that I'm going to hunt, I'll pick a different area for the day.
That makes sense.
Yeah, we typically only have conflicts with bears for two reasons. And the first one is the most common, which I'm sure we'll probably talk about here soon, is that there's a food resource that they're attracted to typically at our houses. That's the most common conflict people have with bears. And the second one is what Jeremy mentioned, the surprise. Typically, we've not made enough noise, or we're intentionally making no noise, and we have come across a bear and they surprised us and we surprised them. And this is one of the reasons why we highly recommend and encourage people to carry bear spray. It is one of the most effective tools we have out there to keep yourself or someone else safe during such a negative encounter with a bear.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And I will ask, because I've recently learned, thanks to Kim, that the longtime suggestions of do or don't run or do or don't play dead depended on which species, the thinking has changed more to a behavioral pattern than a species pattern. So, Kim, why don't you describe that better than I would for our listeners?
Sure. Yeah, the real two behaviors, the only two behaviors we typically see are a defensive behavior, where in that surprise moment, a bear may feel like you're a threat in their mind, and they need to defend themselves, defend their cubs, or defend their food source. And that is a defensive mechanism, much like a prey animal would defend itself if they feel you're trying to eat them. Bears are the same, even though they're not prey animals, they feel like they need to defend themselves in those surprise moments. The only other type of behavior we see is predatory or curious bears are more, and they're more commonly black bears, but we don't really try to talk about it, as you said, Phil, with a species, because both of these behaviors can be exhibited and are exhibited by both species. And in those very quick and sudden moments, it's not important to know which species that you're looking at. It is more important to know what behaviors they might be exhibiting in order to keep yourself safe. So with a bear that's acting defensively, those are the scenarios where we tell people to, you know, try not to run, stand your ground, have your bear spray out and ready to use, and determine what your next course of action needs to be. And if you feel that a bear is going to physically touch you in those moments, those are scenarios where you are best served by playing dead. Whereas a predatory or curious bear, you would still stand your ground and have your bear spray at hand. But in no way, shape, or form would you play dead for those bears that are going to touch you. And you would treat them completely in the opposite way. Make yourself big, shout, throw things, defend yourself with everything you've got. If you do that with a bear that's acting defensively, you might actually make your situation worse and not better. So that's why we talk about it as a more of a behavioral thing than a species thing.
Jeremy, sounded like you had something to add.
No, I was just agreeing.
All right. So we think a lot of times about hikers, but increasingly in the backcountry, mountain bike use is prevalent. And of course, longstanding tradition of horseback riders in our area. The advice you've given makes perfect sense as a hiker. Tell us, are there particular concerns, precautions, additional things to consider for mountain bikers or horseback riders?
No, it's you know, you're still going to carry the bear spray, but I would just say be aware of where you're carrying your bear spray. And so carry it on your person and not in your pack or somewhere that you can't reach it. It needs to be accessible. It's no good if you can't get to it. The bikers, and they're going to be making probably some noise, but a lot of folks like to have their headphones in, and you can't really hear very well of what's going on around you if you have your headphones in. So if you're doing those activities in the, to include running, backcountry running, I don't think putting your headphones is a good idea, so you can be more aware of what's going on in your surroundings.
Agreed. I think there's a misconception out there that people think that bears are paying attention out in the woods and they're going to hear us coming, and they're not paying attention in the way that we think they should be. I have, and I'm sure I'm not the only one who has even driven up on a bear, standing on the side of the road or doing something, and they don't hear you at all. But trucks are loud. How can they not be hearing you? It's because they're not paying attention. So we really need to do our part in letting bears and other wildlife know that humans are out here, we're using this space, and to let them know ahead of time before we crash into them that we're out there too. I think would just add one thing on the bicycle thing. You know, fast-paced recreation, biking and running is a challenge. I think it's a lot of knowing what risk you are taking out there, and maybe running past a wild animal at a high rate of speed, making it a little bit more difficult for them to know that you are coming than somebody who is moving at a slower pace. And then with mountain bikers, you know, there, I think there's a lot of money and attachment to your bike. And I would say and suggest that in an encounter with a bear, ditch your bike. Forget about it. Take care of yourself and forget the bike. And this is where, like Jeremy said, having your bear spray on your person is going to be the important thing. So you can forget about the bike and take care of yourself in those moments or somebody else. And with horseback riders, I ride horses. I'd say stay on your horse. Bears don't really understand horse and rider combination, and they're less likely to be overly curious or interested in you when you are that combination. Getting off is more likely that your horse may choose to leave without you. And so if you stay on, please stay on.
Yeah, the horse may outrun the bear even if you can't.
Exactly.
Let's talk about dogs, hiking with dogs in the backcountry. And does that increase the risk? Does that decrease the risk? Are there special things to consider?
I don't know that it changes the risk. I think that dogs, and I say this as a dog owner who hikes with her dogs, both on leash and off, is that they can make wildlife encounters more challenging. And it really, I think, depends on your dog, its level of training, and your relationship with that dog. Dog barking wildly at a bear or a moose might actually make your situation more stressful for that animal and more challenging to mitigate. A dog that ranges ahead of you on a trail off leash might bring wildlife back to you for help when they get into trouble with it. So I think it is, again, knowing the risk of the choices that you're taking. Understanding that there are challenges associated with hiking with dogs.
I agree with Kim on that. And just like dogs have different personalities, so do bears. So some bears may encounter a dog and run away, and sometimes that bear will come back with that dog depending on the personality of that bear. So just whatever it can go either way.
While we're talking about that, let's talk about food storage, attractant management for backcountry camping, front country camping, and we mentioned briefly, but the unique situation rural property owners are in.
Yes. For front country, storage containers, proper coolers. And I would say when you're done with them for the day and you're getting ready to go to bed, put them in a hard-sided vehicle, preferably. I know that some campgrounds don't allow, you know, you've got to park where you camp, but at least put them in the hard-side vehicle. And, you know, don't have anything in your tent. You know, I'm sorry, your midnight snack or anything that has that smell, it's just not a good idea to have it inside your tent with you.
Yeah, anything that has an odor can be of interest to a bear, even if it is not food. Bears are curious. They explore. They're opportunistic foragers. And if they think that there is an opportunity to have a meal, they're gonna take it. And I think it's up to us to try to prevent those opportunities from occurring. And that includes keeping things like chapstick and deodorant and toothpaste, tobacco completely out of our tents. The only thing that should be in your tent at night is you, a sleeping bag, a pillow if you want, water and bear spray. Those are pretty much it.
And in the backcountry, both in the Idaho Panhandle Forest and the Kootenai Forest, there are food storage orders in place so that food should be put in a proper bear canister or hung from a tree properly, or a food storage locker if there's one available.
Yeah, and as, if people are interested in wanting to know on our public lands and which public lands have food storage requirements and what those entail and what assistance might be available to help you with that, you can actually go to the Interagency Grizzly Bear Committee's website, and they have a giant interactive map that you can click on where you want to go and find out exactly one-stop shopping for what it is that you need to do on that particular piece of public land.
It seems like, and this is shifting a little bit to the current situation, I've been reading a lot of the news here in the panhandle of various bear incidents, and we don't have time nor probably need to recap them all, but it occurs to me that perhaps our cooler, wetter spring, lingering snowpack might have impacted bear behavior, where they're sourcing food. Is there a link there, or if not, you know, tell us more about what is going on. Why perhaps we're seeing so much increased activity, or if it's just a normal amount of activity and that bears are just getting a better press agent.
Well, I think it's a little bit of all the above. There's a lot of factors, of course, that go into this, and I haven't done a study on this directly, but we do know that the fall last year was a tougher one because of the dry season, and we had a good winter this year. And then of course, rolling into the wetter spring. Also, the snow did stay longer. So some of the vegetation that they may be snacking on at this time of year is, you know, a couple weeks behind. Is there a link? There could be, there couldn't be, you know, I'm not going to say one way or the other, but I will say that, you know, the population's increasing. We know that both for the bears and humans. Humans are, and a lot of the folks you kind of mentioned earlier are kind of new to this area. Even if they're from Idaho, maybe they're from an area that doesn't have a lot of bears. So they're moving here and they're encountering bears, and they're starting to figure out that, hey, if I leave my pet food out, or if my trash is left out, or if I don't have electric fence around my chickens or my pigs or my cattle, that they're going to come in there and get to the feed and or the animals themselves. Yeah, so I don't know if there's a direct link, but I feel like there is, but I have not been doing this as long as Kim, so I will pass it to her and let her go with it.
Yeah, you're spot on, Jeremy. You know, it's really difficult when it comes to that human and bear conflict to determine any one particular thing. There are so many different variables out there that determine why and when a bear makes a choice that they do. I mean, first and foremost, they're, like I said, opportunistic foragers. And so if we present them an opportunity, they're going to take it. Very few bears will say no to that. But I think the longer, cooler spring, we've had springs like this before, oftentimes provide a challenge for those subadult bears who don't have the life experience on where to find good food resources yet in their lifetime during different types of seasonal conditions. And so often we'll tend to see a little bit more activity in around homes with those subadult bears, or perhaps a first-time mom, female, that is trying to support kids for the first time in her life. That said, there are a lot more people than there were 20 years ago. There are more bears. I like to tell people that this is what my memoir, when I retire, is going to be called. The title of my book is going to be called, "But I've Never Had a Problem Before." Because it is the number one thing that people tell me when they call asking for assistance. And I get it. You know, you've lived there for 20 years. You've never had a problem before because you've always been able to do it like this. And now suddenly you've got a bear that found it first. And what I like to share with people is that if you have something out that a bear would be interested in food-wise, it's a matter of time. It might be 2 weeks for one person and 20 years for the next, but it will happen. It's a matter of when, not a matter of if. That said, I think there's some pretty easy things that we can all follow in order to mitigate and stop those conflicts as they're happening, before they're happening, after they're happening. And that's primarily what, you know, Jeremy and I's jobs are there to do for residents, is to be helpful and help solve problems and help. We can help be very creative, because after a certain period of time, we've seen it all. And we might be able to help in a very unique way that you may not have thought of yourself.
Well put. We could talk for a long time about specific instances that have occurred, but I think of most interest is probably resources and programs and further education. So unless there's anything else, Jeremy, you want to touch on with the recent incidents, maybe just tell us where folks can find out more information about bear incidents, bear management, bear awareness in Idaho, and then we'll have Kim do the same thing.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So the IGBC is something that all of us belong to, whether Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, and Washington, and tribal, and that's a great resource that's out there. She kind of hinted to it earlier. There's a lot of good information that you can get for, you know, what's approved for food storage and things of that sort. In addition to that, you could just call the regional office and they will connect you to my voicemail or our bear biologist's voicemail, or we also have seasonal biologist that's part of his job is to help with this mitigation and any instance where more information is needed. They'll contact us. We'll call them up. I dealt with two of them this morning. Sometimes it's just individuals asking questions about how to properly hook up an electric fence. And sometimes they need a little bit more than that. So, it's a case by case situation. So it's really hard to say, you know, go to this spot or this spot, but they can start with the regional office and we'll help direct them from there.
And that's the regional office of Idaho Department of Fish and Game.
Yes. Yes.
And the IGBC is the International Grizzly Bear
Interagency Bear Committee.
There we go. Kim, anything to add for resources in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, the IGBC or Interagency Grizzly Bear Committee website is a great one. It can give you everything from directing you to state agencies for local resources, directing you to nonprofits for helpful resources, you know, and even giving you population research information, papers to read, that kind of stuff. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks also has an integrated website that has a lot of information, both black bear and grizzly bear, and direct information on how to reach all of the various grizzly bear and black bear specialists across the state. But for folks that are looking for local information, looking for presentation, or even just help with preventing a conflict, or you've got a conflict that's occurring, if you can't find my phone number, you can always call the non-emergency phone number for the Sheriff's Dispatch within your county, and either they can reach out to me or they can give you my phone number directly.
Well, as we draw to a close here, are there any upcoming events or programs either of you would like to mention, or any closing thoughts? And Jeremy, why don't we go with you?
Oh, how far of a calendar do you want there?
So, I think in the next few weeks or a month or two.
So obviously we've got the fairs that are coming up, and that's a little bit further down the road. And we always have stuff set up at the fair, not only for fish and game, but for bear information also. The other conservation officers and other people that are there, fish and game employees, they're going to be biologists, habitat, fisheries. So, but everyone's going to have the knowledge to direct you to where where you want to go. There's always talks that are happening. The next one, I believe, is going to be happening down in Elmira, down towards where one of the incidents just occurred. The sheriff every year has a couple talks that are put on and that we'll go to. And, you know, just like Kim said, any education thing, whether it's a school or just 4-H or the farmer.
As we draw to a close, Kim, are there any final thoughts or upcoming programs you'd like to mention?
Certainly. Yeah, anyone can call and ask for a program, whether you be a club, an organization, a school group, or camp. I'm always happy to come and talk. Tomorrow, I'm going to be at the Homeowners Association meeting for Thompson Chain of Lakes and Happy's in Montana. This next week, I will be in Thompson Falls at the library at 5 p.m. on Wednesday, doing a talk for them. And then I've got various summer camp programs that will be doing with kids of all ages throughout Lincoln and Sanders County. And then also hope to be at the doing a booth about bear awareness with the Forest Service at the Huckleberry Festival in Trout Creek, Montana in August.
Well, thank you. This has been a wonderful hour. It's gone by so quickly and there's so much information here. We want to thank our guests, Jeremy Gaffield, Senior Confirmation Officer with the Idaho Department of Fish and Game, Kim Annis, the Grizzly Bear Management Specialist with the Montana Fish, Wildlife and Parks. If you've missed any of this or it's so packed you just want to listen to it again, it will be available as a podcast later on today or tomorrow at krfy.org. And thank you, Jeremy, and thank you, Kim, for joining us.
Thank you.